Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Launching a new business? 99 Designs is your number one choice for quality design at an affordable price. Start your next design project at 99designs.com/hack and get a $99 upgrade for free.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It's so very cool of you to join me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a Canadian supermom of five, personal development coach, public speaker, and the author of What You Focus On Grows. Between 1995 and 2005, my guest was the co-founder and president of Upward Motion and created the web assessment tool called Real Estate Simulator. She is now the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching and the owner and creator of Journal Engine Software. My guest designed the Frame of Mind Coaching program to provide her clients with a powerful foundation, which enables them to develop and apply the skills of deliberate thought directly to achieving higher levels of success. Now, let's hack Kim Adas. Before we get started, I want to thank today's sponsor, 99 Designs. If you're like many listeners, you're in the early stages of getting your business off the ground. Your to-do list may seem like it's a mile long, but there's one task you should tackle sooner than later: your branding. Businesses can get maximum creativity with 99 Designs, the online marketplace where dozens of designers compete to deliver the best design. You get to choose from ideas created just for you from awesome designers around the world. When you're just starting out, of course you'll want to get your logo designed, but 99 Design also makes it easy to round out your visual identity with other designs too, like stationery, a great website, or whatever else your business needs. Your brand could very well be the best business investment you'll make. Get the help you need at 99 Designs. When you're ready to bring your brand to life, visit 99designs.com/hack. As a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you'll get a free $99 upgrade to use on your first design. That's 99designs.com/hack. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we not only have an extra special guest, but we have another extra special Canadian guest. I love this. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to this call.
Excellent. Me too. Let's jump straight into it. Kim, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think that the biggest thing that I do that has contributed to my success is that I keep trying, honestly, is that I just, you know, as much as I've been kicked, as much as I fall, I just keep getting up and I keep reinventing a different wheel, a better wheel, a wheel with more spokes, a wheel with bigger tires. Like, I just keep trying.
I love it. Have you always had that within you that just get... totally something doesn't do what it's supposed to do, yet you just, I'm going to try again.
Well, I think historically, I used to own another company in the past and, you know, many years ago, and I was responsible for sales and marketing, and I used to be called a bulldog. I would kind of latch onto a person's pant leg and not let go until I got what I wanted. So I was known for that. My style has changed. I'm not as aggressive. I'm a little kinder.
It's probably good.
But I'm just, I think, as persistent until I find something that works.
Nice. And how do we know when something works? How do we know when something doesn't work? Do we?
Well, of course. When something doesn't work, you're frustrated. You look at the results and you go, this should be better. I'm putting so much effort into this and my ROI doesn't add up. And so that could be with a new program you're launching. It could be with training you're developing. It could be with advertising you're trying. It could be with anything. It could be simply with how you're spending your time day by day by day by day. It could be who you're talking to, who your prospects are, and whether or not they buy, and if they're the right target market. And so after you do what you're doing for a little bit, you kind of have to step back and evaluate it and decide if that makes sense. Is that working? If not, what do I need to tweak? What do I need to change? What do I need to make better? What do I need to stop doing? What do I need to keep doing? What do I need to try that's different? I mean, at the end of the day, that is entrepreneurship as far as I'm concerned.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right. So you run a great coaching company now, coaching business, and you had businesses prior, but I want to go back a little bit further than that if we can. So there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have this calling to change the world in some big way, or as mostly seems to be the case, they find they simply cannot work for somebody else. Kim, can you tell me which side of the fence you fall on and when you discovered this about yourself?
Honestly, I sit right in the middle. But
Nice.
And I've sat right in the middle since the get-go. When I was young, I used to dream about like moving to South Africa or Ethiopia and starting a school. Like when I was just little. Those kinds of things. So I always had that desire to change the world. Having said that, certainly what had me starting this company was working for someone else and feeling like I couldn't breathe. And I was hired by a coaching company and I was in there and I thought, oh, this is going to be the most perfect thing. You know, their values are a complete match for me. But when I got in, stated values and executed values were two different things. And I just clashed with everything. I was like, what do you call it? A bull in a china shop. I just did not fit. It was awful. And finally at the end, I sat down with one of the partners in the company and he said, I'd like to talk about your future with the company. I said, is it over yet? That was my reaction. And you can't imagine the relief I felt when I left. And I am an entrepreneur through and through. It's in my blood. It's in my history. It's in my genes. It's everywhere. And I am not designed to work for others.
Wow. I love it. So is it over yet? I love that. But then you're walking out, right? Your final day as an employee. Yeah. And now you have to go make it on your own. Was there any reluctance in you? Was it just pure joy?
Honestly, I didn't think like in that moment, here's what I'm going to do next. So it wasn't that well planned out. But for me, the amount, like the relief I felt leaving that place was enormous. Physical relief, mental relief, like every kind of relief you could think of. I was just free of the shackles. Like one of the things, I had to be there at 8 a.m. I have 2 kids. And so that meant I had to bring my kids to daycare for 7:30. At the time, I was a single mom at the time. Trying to get those kids up to daycare for that time of the day and getting myself to work. It was just like not fun, not enjoying my life here. And so just the reduction of that stress alone was a huge relief. Huge.
Nice. I love it. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to that, especially and then having the 2 kids, being a single mom, like most people would think that they can't make that leap at that point. So I'm really glad to hear that you did.
Yeah.
It seems like you made the right choice.
I felt like there's no other option. Like I've just, if you want me to die an early death, keep me here. There was no other option for me. I just had to go. Had to go.
Awesome. I love it. All right. So your one thing that you do is you keep trying. You can get kicked, you can fall, and you'll just get back up. You'll reinvent the wheel. You'll add more spokes if you need to. Now, every blog post, every expert talks about 80-20 rule. I'm sure you've heard of this.
Yep.
Do 20%, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at, and delegate the rest.
Yep.
Kim, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Anything administrative. So I give away everything related to accounting, bookkeeping, invoicing, collecting money, anything like that. It's out of my hands, out of my office. I get my monthly reports. Thank you very much. That's it. So that's one thing for sure. The other thing is technology issues. I own a software company and I outsource. In other words, I have someone here who takes care of it. I don't look at it at all. The other thing is more and more now when I look at sales and marketing, there are bits and pieces where I clearly am the voice of the company and nobody at this point can quite step into those shoes. But there are lots of other bits and pieces where lots of other people can easily take over. And I am really determined to give away as much as I can.
Nice. I love it. I love owning a software company and not knowing the technology side and not having that stop you from owning a software company.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I love it.
And it's my second round at that. The first time I sold my company and did quite well.
Wow. And so this clear understanding of, like, there was no hesitation. Anything administrative you are not good at.
No.
Do you feel like maybe you realized this too late in your business? And
no.
Because I find that lots of times we hold on to things. We think, no, I'm really good at this. Then it really takes something to just show us, like, that self-awareness is hard, right?
For me personally, I could work from home, but then, so the minute I decided to be in business is the minute I found an admin person and the minute I had an office space and put that admin person in the office right beside mine. So it was, in my mind, I had so many doubts about my ability to do admin that I wouldn't actually have taken the action to do anything from a business perspective without an admin.
Wow. That's great. That self-awareness is key, to know those things about yourself, right?
I don't know if that's self-awareness or self-doubt or fear or terror, to be honest.
Oh, I guess so. From the outside, it seems like to know those things. Like, I don't know. I feel like our egos get a hold of it.
Yeah, no, for me, it was like, I can't do this. I need someone to help me right from the beginning.
Yeah, that's excellent. And then the technology, I guess, was the same way. You wanted to create software and you realized you couldn't do it.
Oh, I knew. I mean, again, from the get-go, I hired a good friend who helped me find a software developer. Because how do you interview a software developer when you don't even know what questions to ask? How do you know if they're good? I didn't know. I had no idea.
Nice. So did you at all think that maybe you should find like a co-founder to do software rather than just hiring someone?
Or? No.
No. You're not of that sort of frame of mind where...
I mean, I had partners in my past business. I had two partners. One of them is my ex-husband. And so this time around, I didn't want a co-owner. I really didn't. And I was pretty clear about that.
Nice. All right. If we can, let's move into projects. So projects is a loose term. It can be the software you wanted to create or just a new direction you want to take your business in. But can you sort of walk me through, is there a process that you have now to decide whether or not you should take on a new project within your business?
So at the beginning, I think that I took on all kinds of things that weren't necessarily all good fits. I experimented a lot. I still experiment a lot. I'm by nature an experimenter. However, now I'm a lot more scrupulous. I'm able to see something and say this fits or does not fit with our market, our future, our goals, our intentions. And I'm able to eliminate a lot of the potential projects from my field of vision, which is super important because otherwise my eyes could be everywhere. So eliminating a lot of options is important, surprisingly enough, because oftentimes when you tell someone eliminate your options, you think about eliminating opportunities. And I think it's very important. What I've learned over time is focus on those opportunities or projects that are a match for where you are heading. Otherwise, you just spend a lot of time, resources, money, and you end up being scattered and you end up doing nothing well. So that's number one. Number two is, even as I evaluate projects and look at them, a very important strategy I have used since the very beginning is to pilot an idea. So try it. Try it on a small scale. See what works. See what doesn't work. Lower your risk. Experiment. Learn. Come back to the drawing table. Fix. Adjust. And then decide whether or not to move forward. So that has always been my strategy, even when it comes to partnerships. So we have lots of partnerships, but they don't all get established from the very, very beginning. I usually experiment first and test out smaller ideas and see what it's like to work with someone else. And if it does work, then I want to step it up a notch and then another notch and then another notch.
Nice. I really like that. And do you feel that it's just a natural progression to go from kind of jumping on ideas really quickly at the start to, as you say, becoming more scrupulous now with your ideas and your time? But isn't it, can you start a business and, or start in entrepreneurship, even like your first business, and not be like that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just seems like such a natural progression that as we grow as entrepreneurs and our businesses grow, that we become more scrupulous. But where's the cart? Where's the horse, I guess?
Yeah, honestly, I think it's a character issue. I think it's a personality issue. Some people are very open to new ideas. Other people are not. Some people have an idea and they just have tunnel vision and they are not even lifting their heads up to see the opportunity that is a great fit and right in front of their nose. And other people are just turning their heads every 5 minutes that they cannot focus. Like, I have one client, probably the most intelligent client I've ever had, and he's trying to run three businesses at a time and not really gaining substantial traction given the effort he's putting in. And so my conversation with him quite repeatedly is, you know, pick one, just pick one. And finally, he's come to a place where he's able to put the others on a back burner and he's starting to see some much greater traction. So I think that to answer your question is really an individual characteristic or personality trait that you see in terms of being open or more focused when it comes to opportunity.
Nice. And so then an extension of projects, and you found the way to be scrupulous and to come up with the right directions to head, the right projects to decide to put your resources into, yet things still go wrong, right? So as entrepreneurs, as human beings in general, one of our greatest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making a mistake, deciding to go into a project, and then failing in front of your employees, possibly. So Kim, could you walk me through how to be wrong?
I love being wrong. Like, one of my favorite kinds of conversations is when someone says, I don't think you're making the right decision, and here's why, and here's a better decision. And like, I get excited because someone suddenly has clarity and all I want is that. That's all I want. And so I'm very, very okay with not being right. I'm much rather have that clarity instead of being right or accurate. As far as being wrong in public, oh man, I'm the queen of being wrong in public. So I honestly, it's truly not an issue for me. I own it. And again, people see me experimenting and failing all the time. And I work with a team of coaches, and what I do with that is I say, here's what we tried, here's what didn't work, here's why it didn't work, here's what we're going to try instead. So they see that falling and getting up over and over again publicly. And honestly, what I'm truly modeling is a little bit of emotional resilience. Even if it's hard sometimes, even if I fall and I just want to crawl into a hole, eventually my head pops out of the hole and I am able to share that experience. And so I'm okay to be wrong. I'm okay to fail. I'm not okay to be wrong, like to stay in that hole forever. That's not where I want to be.
And when you say that you love when someone finally has clarity.
Yeah.
So you have an idea. You're saying we're running with this.
Yeah.
Immediately somebody brings you what looks like clarity. At what point do you, Kim, as like the founder and like the creator of this, be like, no, actually, this is what we're doing? How much proof do they need to show you? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
How much is there stubbornness in you that you're like, no, this is actually what we're doing?
So let me tell you a quick story. So let me kind of give you a little history. When we coach people, we coach highly driven leaders, entrepreneurs, executives, etc. And what we do is we look at how they think and how their thinking impacts their outcomes. So when I first started to coach, I made a decision, and the decision was that in order to get into people's minds and understand their patterns of thinking, I was going to have them journal every day in an online journal. That's why we created Journal Engine. And we would give them a question, they would journal, their journal would go to me at the time, I was the only coach, and I would read and respond to the journal so that there was daily dialogue in between coaching calls. So it was an intimate, very, very rich experience. And I would get to the kind of the emotions, the heart, the soul, the center, kind of the center point of their thinking, and we would make great progress together. And so that was my idea originally. Well, I hired this guy to help me. And really, this was in the first few months that I launched this coaching idea. I hired this guy to help me create a business plan. I had met him. We had been talking for months. I thought he was probably the smartest guy I ever met in my life. I thought to myself, you know, maybe someday he'll be a partner with me. Who knows? And so I thought it's a good idea to experiment. Let's try this out. And so I hired him, again, piloting the idea, testing out what it was going to be like to work together to help me with that business plan. Well, week one, he came into my office and he asked me a bunch of questions, how journaling works, how I coach people, why I coach this way, et cetera, et cetera. Week two, he came back to my office and he said, Kim, I've done some research. And remember, this was 10 years ago. I've done some research and there's no evidence to suggest that journaling has any impact on the coaching process. I think you're selling snake oil.
Ouch.
Well, I could feel my heart racing. This was supposed to be the most intelligent guy I ever met. And I looked at him. I said, so you're questioning my integrity. And I said, I guess we're done then. We can't work together. And I literally got up and walked into the door. And I went back and I'm like, oh my God, there's no evidence to suggest that journaling is effective. And I started to do my own research.
And you proved it.
I panicked. Well, I panicked and I started to look it up. And there at the time, really, there was very little evidence to suggest that journaling works. Now it's all over the place. It's really quite evident. And I'm part of the research, to be honest. And I had to make a decision right there and then and decide whether or not I was going to kind of back up and create a new coaching model because this guy was smart and he knew what he was talking about. Or if I was going to, you know, like what would I do with this? Find the proof. What was I going to do with it? And honestly, I had to really dig down and say, what, forget about the evidence, forget about this guy, forget about, and I was a journaler. What do I truly, honestly believe? And I had been coaching, let's say 20 people up until that point. Like, what's it been like? And at that point, I really made a decision. Not only is this a centerpiece of my business, but really, truly, it's the magic potion that allows the transformation to take place for a client during the coaching experience. And so I totally stood behind it. So that wasn't for me being stubborn. That was me really kind of tuning into my intuition and my deep personal conviction to decide whether this is truly a good path for me or not.
Yeah. Okay. So stubborn was the wrong word. You're right. I don't think, as Canadians, I don't think we're allowed to be stubborn.
No, we're not.
Nice. But I love that. I love that it's, you have to be in tune with your intuition, your gut. You have to know what it is you're stand for and what you're pushing for. And you do have to push back sometimes.
Yeah. And you know your business and you know when something sounds like a good fit, a good plan, accurate, smart, or when it's just like totally screams no.
Right. Exactly. Excellent. All right, Kim, we're going to wrap up on something I've been calling the entrepreneurial gap. And you will probably have a lot of experience with this as you deal with entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So the entrepreneurial gap, I find that entrepreneurs, what we're doing is we're always, always, always pushing forward, always looking ahead, setting goals 1 week, a month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years out. We're always setting goals and pushing ourselves. When we get, when my business is doing this in 6 months, I'll be successful. When I'm there in a year, I'll be successful. Yet before we even hit those goals, we set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future. And we're always in this sort of state of not being successful. It's always in the future. I find that we oftentimes fail to even stop and look at where we've come from, what we've learned, what we've done, and sort of reflect on it and appreciate it. So I would love, Kim, if you could right now stop, look around, look behind you, and tell me how you feel about everything you've done, everything you've learned, and how you've sort of grown as an entrepreneur.
Great question. For me, I get to live a really extraordinary life. And a large part of that is due to the fact that I get to coach extraordinary people who are reaching extraordinary goals. Now, when you think of a coach, it's always about a coach giving somebody else something. It's a giving profession. The truth of the matter is every time I coach somebody, I'm the receiver. And they happen to be the beneficiaries of my receiving. And so I truly coach some of the most interesting, engaging, accomplished, challenged, tortured people in the world. And so for me, even if maybe my revenue goals aren't always where I want them to be, and I do feel that feeling that you're describing sometimes, like, I'm not quite there yet. I'm not quite there yet. I'm not quite there yet. The impact that I have experienced and as a result have left on my clients has been tremendous. Our testimonials, our referrals all speak to the fact that we deliver outstanding coaching. So, you know, when I look at my business, I think there are so many things we can be improving. We can be improving our marketing, our sales, our outreach, like so many things we can be improving. But fundamentally, my proudest thing is that we deliver just amazing coaching consistently from client to client, coach to coach. That's it. That's what I feel.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. Okay, we've got to talk about your business in passing, Kim, throughout this conversation. And I would love it if you would specifically tell the listener where they could find out more about you and more about your business.
Yeah, so it's frameofmindcoaching.com. Everything is there. And whoever is listening and is interested, on that site, on the website, there's an invitation to take an assessment. It's not a typical or an ordinary assessment. So there are a bunch of questions and there are journaling questions. So go on there, answer the questions like you would journal in your own personal journal. Those questions will go to a coach and you will get the opportunity to have a frame of mind coaching experience based on your journals. It's amazing. Just that one call. I encourage everybody to try that.
Excellent. And are you on Twitter?
Of course. Kim Addis.
Kim at Kim Addis. Please, if you've enjoyed this conversation as much as I have, then go follow up with any questions you have or just tell Kim that you heard her on the show and I'm sure she would love to hear from you. So Kim, thank you again so much for this conversation. It's been a lot of fun and just please keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thank you for having me on your show. It's been fun.
You're welcome. Kim, thank you. Thank you so much. I don't know if you know it, but I know that you out there listening know that I have this soft spot for Canadians. I guess it's because, because I'm Canadian, I guess. We got to stick together. Sorry. I love you guys down in the States. I really, 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 truly do. But, you know, as Canadians, we just have to. So that was a lot of fun. And I do thank you. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So before we get into anything further, a couple episodes ago, I had an amazing sponsor. They're called Chargeover, and they gave out a free guide. And lots of you out there listening went and downloaded that guide and said it helped you a lot. And you actually emailed me and told me about it. And so I do just want to make sure that if you didn't get a chance to do it, you can make your life easier and download Chargeover's free guide, 7 Amazing Hacks for Recurring Billing Companies at chargeover.com/hack. Chargeover.com/hack will get you that guide. And if you aren't a recurring billing company yet, you should really think about it because recurring billing is really kind of the essential business aspect now and the way you want to get paid rather than just getting paid once and having to find new customers, get paid over and over again. So I just thank you again, Chargeover. And I go back through this conversation and Kim said a lot of cool things, a lot of smart things. And I wanted to go back to the very, very, very beginning because she said something that was really, really, really smart. And you probably heard that. But that wasn't the one thing. That wasn't the one thing that as I went through the whole conversation again, then I had this thing circled. It was at 2 minutes into the conversation and I thought that was the one thing. Maybe you did too. But then later in the conversation, Kim really hit home on something and it was really, really, really impressive. And it really, really made me think. And it sparked these ideas in my head. I think you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Even as I evaluate projects and look at them, a very important strategy I have used since the very beginning is to pilot an idea. So try it. Try it on a small scale, see what works, see what doesn't work, lower your risk, experiment, learn, come back to the drawing table, fix, adjust, and then decide whether or not to move forward.
And that's the hack. Kim. Yes. So 6 months ago, maybe 7 months ago, if I had had this conversation with Kim, I would have skipped right over this part of the conversation. It wouldn't have made as much sense to me, but if you know or if you don't know, so over the course of launching Hack the Entrepreneur, then I started working with Rainmaker.fm, which is part of Copyblogger Media. Copyblogger Media then, in around January, asked if I would like to create a podcasting course and sort of lay out everything, all the every PDF, every email, everything I did in a very step-by-step form for creating Hack the Entrepreneur before launch, during launch, and to kind of build this audience of you out of nothing, basically. And so we did. And when we started creating it, and then it was kind of like we didn't know exactly what people would want. So their thing, that this is what they've always done, and I'd never done it, was we created and launched a pilot version of the course. It seemed weird to me, but it made perfect sense because we got a bunch of people in, 100 people or something signed up, and it was amazing. The feedback allowed us to go back in and make the course exactly what it needed to be, rather than completely assuming that people wanted this or that people would want it the way we've made it. And it was brilliant. And then we did one more small pilot launch. And actually right now, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to this on Tuesday when it comes out, until Friday, actually the course is open only till Friday, and then we're closing it down possibly till the end of the year. But this is the full official launch now. And this is after two pilots to kind of decide what works. I guess I should tell you, if you did want to check out the course, Showrunner Course, showrunnercourse.fm is the website. And you can just check out the sales page, see if you did want to start a podcast. But that's not what this is about. This is about piloting stuff, piloting ideas, piloting with partners, piloting just everything to see, to lower your risk, as Kim says, and then also to fix, adjust, and move forward, or decide even if it's worth moving forward, right? So if we're stopped and we haven't actually executed on an idea yet, we could have lots of ideas, and these ideas get big. These ideas can spiral into massive things that are daunting and overwhelming for us when we're stopped. And to the idea of launching a pilot, a small little idea, rather whether it's an ebook or a course you wanted to do or a software project. It's like when I did Velocity Page, we did version 0.9, which I didn't really realize was a pilot, but it was for software. That was like a pilot sort of launch. Normally you launch at version 1.0 in case you're not in the software world, but we launched as 0.9 because we didn't feel like we were ready, but we didn't know where else to go until we let it out into the wild, into the world, to get feedback from people and to see where that should go. And so, Kim, this is brilliant. And this, I mean, you are a very, very, very smart lady and a very, very smart business coach. So you know this. And I'm just so happy I got to have this conversation with you after me. Now I finally understand. I don't think I'd launch anything now without it being a pilot first. It's a brilliant way to do it. And it really lowers your risk. It lowers even your barrier to getting started and getting a product out or a service out into the world. So really, really think about this and just think about how you can execute a pilot launch of your own. And it doesn't need to be a launch as in a whole bunch of people, but I mean, you get 5 or 10 people in to give you feedback on an idea. This is brilliant. And this helps you create a better product and to get word out about your project. So Kim, thank you again so much. That was a lot of fun. And I hope you out there enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. All right. Well, this has been fun. Again, just in passing, I haven't mentioned it once and I probably should have. but Showrunner, the Showrunner podcasting course is available right now for the next couple of days. If you're listening to this when it was published, showrunnercourse.fm or showrunner.fm is the podcast. I have another show on Copyblog or on Rainmaker and with my co-host Jared Morris. And it's all about podcasting and you could learn about it if you are interested in that at all. Otherwise, it's been fun. Thank you so much again. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.